across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
What's it like? Condicious.
Good afternoon, and as Ollie Slack slides off into the Saturday sun, we shift from footy to foodie. This is Flavour, and I am Matt Bentman.
I'm Alan Mulder.
And I'm Sue Bailey.
Today on Flavour, a Christmassy feel. We visit four of our local bakeries and patisseries to find out what seasonal specials they have on offer, and we hear what festive cheeses Hum Closen is selling. We even get advice on what wines to drink with your Christmas dinner.
We also hear about Aroma's new Aperitivo and about their expansion. And I sample some tequila cocktails at Cambridge's first tequila bar.
First, though, Nikki Senyard, author of the highly readable and inspiring Flavour Thesaurus, which we've referred to here on Flavour many times. A book highly praised for the quality of its writing and for its highly practical suggestions for flavour combinations. And now Nikki has another groundbreaking book published called Lateral Cooking. I met her earlier in the week and began by asking how lateral cooking came about.
In my head at the beginning, it wasn't lateral cooking. It was a book about how to flavour lots of different basic kitchen preparations, recipes, dishes, whatever you want to call them. So it would be how to flavour a soda bread or how to flavour ice cream. Lots and lots of different ways of taking a basic idea in different directions. It was sort of 4 years in the mix, and then I started to think about how I was going to organise all those starting point recipes when I came across the idea of perhaps, you know, dividing them into groups and then within the groups dividing the recipes onto a continuum, so plotting each of them in relation to each other. For example, it takes, if you start with a very basic baked custard, what does it take to turn that into a creme caramel? What does it take to turn a creme caramel into creme brulee? They're all like little steps away from each other. So I just found it really useful. Having cooked for a really long time, being a very experienced cook, I had no idea that you could, that you could tweak a certain preparation and also what you could learn about cooking by understanding those things in relation to each other. So if you are, you know, if you're making a creme caramel and it's a baked custard made of milk and whole eggs, then if you make the same kind of basic baked custard but you use just yolks and cream, then you make a creme brulee, then you completely understand what the yolk and what the white and what the milk and what difference does it make to use those kind of things. So when you look at I'm quite interested in looking at people's recipes and then deconstructing them, knowing exactly what I know now, yeah. I can see that the reason that Marcus Waring's custard tart is a 5-star gold award winner is because it's a creme brulee set in a pastry case. Of course, that's going to be much nicer than, you know, your nan's, milk and a couple of eggs.
Made with skim milk, possibly.
Grey skim milk.
Yeah.
So, and then in order to plot them on the continuums and make them as useful as possible, so taking custard again as an example, I had to bring everything in line with each other as much as possible, make one point constant where possible. So in the custard section, everything is 250ml or 500ml of milk or cream. And that way, it makes it easier for the user or the reader to understand how the different ingredients are working in relation to each other. And in fact, you know, once you've got a couple of those basic ideas in your head about custard, it's very easy to go off and make any kind of baked custard or quiche or, you know, to riff on bread and butter pudding, all those kind of things that are custard-based meals. You only need to know how much egg it takes to set the milk and how much, and what heat, you know, to keep the heat down with all custards unless you put flour in it. Kind of once you know that, off you go. Yeah. And then you can start, you know, it's not always going to work out if you start pushing the boundaries. But, I mean, certainly, as far as custard's concerned, really useful thing to know. You know, you can start to get creative with it because the great thing about custard is it's very amenable to all sorts of flavours and additions and twiddling around, which sometimes we want to do.
So in one sense, it's introducing sort of ratios, but a really good understanding of the interaction of ingredients,
yeah,
which you've done in such an interesting way. You haven't made it a textbook approach. You put a lot of wit and a lot of sort of bits of food history and food culture in there along the way, which makes it a really nice book to read.
Yeah, I mean, I've written it like the Flavor Thesaurus because that's, I mean, I write it like the book I want to read. So, I mean, it could be, someone could write a very similar thing, I guess, in a much more scientific way with black and white, fig one, fig two kind of. It doesn't work for me because I suppose I want to read food writing that is more in line with Nigella's How to Eat or MFK Fisher's books or Nigel Slate. You know, that I'm interested in food and understanding cooking in a
more lyrical,
appetizing, yes, lyrical, yeah, context, exactly. Yeah. Rather, I don't get excited by reading about unraveling of proteins in gelatin. I kind of don't need to know. I really need to know how much leaf gelatin I need to set a certain amount of liquid and a few more bits and pieces of understanding. That's more useful to me.
Your book is very readable, though. I think it's absolutely lovely.
Well, I think first and foremost, it's a book. You know, yes. As I said to you, my first job, I was a librarian. I'm very, very bookish person. It's my great, one of my great pleasures in life. And so the first, before it's anything, before it's even an instruction manual in a way, it's got to be something that you pick up and open and you find it hard to stop. And I'm very glad to say that, it hasn't been out very long. Mm. But I went to Honey & Co. the other night and had a chat with them. And Itamar said, he just was having a real struggle to stop reading it. And I think, haha, good, I've created another rabbit hole.
The Flavor Thesaurus, for people who don't know that book, is such a genius idea within, again, I think you said that you couldn't find any book that wasn't, if you like, again, deep science, that was looking at flavour combinations and flavour pairings, and you experimented with this, and lo and behold, that's where the Flavor Thesaurus came from.
There is a bit more now, but there's still not an awful lot written about flavour, and it wasn't like, I did think that there would be a lot about flavour within books that I liked, and it turned out that wasn't the case, and it was too late. I'd already taken the advance. So, yeah, I got stuck into reading science textbooks that are written for the flavour industry, and there aren't many of them. I mean, there's probably, a dozen. The more I got into writing about flavour and flavour combinations, the more it became apparent to me that the science side of it, while it informs what things taste like, it has to, that's what flavour is, it doesn't necessarily inform what combinations work together, because really culture is much more important. What your mum fed you when you were a child is more important than eugenol or hexanol or any of those things. That is kind of, that in a way, that was an invitation to make the Flavor Thesaurus more interesting, because culture, how it affects what we eat and what we like, and the fact that a far-flung country might put two ingredients together that we think is, like, really shocking. Mm. That's more interesting, because that's more of an invitation to say, OK, I'm challenged myself to try that, because if a whole country worth of people think this works together,
it's worth a try.
It's got to be worth a try. Yeah. Try it before you decry it.
How would you suggest people best use your book?
I wouldn't, because it's so... They're multifaceted. The thing that I found with the Flavor Thesaurus is that there are people who, there are some people who really use the back index a lot. Like, I pick it up, it's in the kitchen, I've got this, I pick it up, I refer to it, I get on with it. You know, they really have a very pragmatic relationship with, I need it as prompt. And then there are people who do that and then turn to the front to get more ideas, because, if you can follow the back index, then if you want to know a little bit more, then blueberry and lemon will take you to the lemon section, and then you're reading the lemon, you've got a lemon in your hand and you're suddenly reading all these different things that you might do with it rather than pair it with blueberry. So use it as a start point and then get a little bit lost and then decide what you want to do. Mm. And then there are people who read it like a novel. So I can't really, and then the same with lateral cooking. You might say, you could just keep this next to your bedside or where you like to curl up with a glass of wine in the living room and read it, because it's 612 pages, it's one of those things that you can just read in a bit here and a bit there. Or you could say, right, I'm going to learn to cook some things off by heart, so I'm going to read the bread section and I'm going to trot along the continuum of bread, and I'm going to make a flatbread and a soda bread and a yeast bread and then some buns and then a maybe a brioche, if you can bear it. Not something I enjoy making, but I do enjoy making panettone, which is in the brioche section. And now is the time. I'm going to get my panettone stuff together because you need to soak some fruit in booze for a day. So I might put that to soak today. Need a nice warm kitchen as well, and we've got the heating on at the moment. And then ending up in rhubarbas. No one minds a rhubarba. That's one of the things that I didn't have to worry about giving away when I was working on this. If you do all those things, you'll learn that the, you know, the ratio is 500 grams of flour to 300 ml of liquid, and you'll realise that you understand an awful lot about what the difference of, you know, what the difference of adding milk to a bread mixture, or you know, how much butter you might want to add to a brioche. It's kind of up to you whether you want to make a lean one or a rich one. Learn so much about that. In a few weeks' time, you could become much more of an expert of bread making than you were. And then you can go off and get into the whole sourdough and, you know, lose your mind and become one of the people. There's some fantastic bread forums. You know, so I think it can take you off. It can start you off on a journey. Ooh. Or you can say, I'm going to be the kind of person that can cook an awful lot of things by heart. And lateral cooking is really good for that. It's written with that in mind, that you will, these things will become ingrained in your consciousness. You will learn some of the basic things. That means that you often don't need to refer to anything, and then once you don't need to refer to written text, then you start to feel more confident about what you're seeing, what you're feeling, what you're smelling. And then, you know, once you really understand something, you really start playing with it. And, you know, it's January, we're going to all be hard up. You start opening the fridge and the cupboard, take all the things out that are going to go off in the next few weeks, and start planning your cooking around your ingredients rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent idea. Do you have any plans for another book?
There's one in the works. It's sold to Bloomsbury, my publisher, and I will be getting on with it in January, even though I thought I was going to be getting on with it now, but I'm doing the American translation of this. So
thank you so much, Nikki Senyett.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nikki Senyett's books are available in both of Cambridge's main bookshops, and I would recommend them highly.
Yeah, I would as well. I've used the Flavour Thesaurus a lot, and I've given it to quite a few people as gifts as well, and they've all liked it. Did she say anything about how her writing developed? Because it is really good.
It is indeed. I mean, one of the things she originally worked was in advertising, and one of the key things she had to do was distill a lot of information down. But she also, she said, was a librarian, so enjoyed very much researching things, and it certainly shows in which the way in which she writes.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
There's a lot of research gone into this, certainly into the Flavour Thesaurus. Yeah, fantastic. Any clue about what her next book will be about?
I'm afraid she didn't divulge.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Well, now on to the first part of our visit around some local bakeries and patisseries to see what they have on offer for Christmas. First, just around the corner in Norfolk Street, we have the Norfolk Street Bakery.
As every year, we're going to have the traditional English Christmas pudding with a lot of dry fruits and port and alcohol. And then the little mince pies.
Right, and what's kind of pastries on the mince pies?
It's our sweet pastry.
The mince pies and the Christmas pudding are your own, made by you.
Yeah. And then we have the Portuguese version, which is going to be the bolo rei, like a sweet bread. And it looks like a round cake with the middle, with a lot of candy fruits, dry fruits, nuts, you know, it's raised like a bread.
Yeah.
Proof like a bread. You're going to do the Yolo log, the chocolate version. It's a bit French. It came from France. But the kids, they like them every year. Another version of the bolo rei, but it's like, instead of being round, it's like long, with the creme pâtissier inside and gila. Gila is a kind of pumpkin jam we use a lot in Christmas. For the people who don't like candy fruits, we're going to do a queen version of the bolo rei. And this one, the rainha one, the queen one, is just with the nuts. No candy fruits.
Right. When are these going to be on sale?
From the English version, from the 15th of December. Christmas pudding and the mince pies. And then the Portuguese version, normal people order, but from that week we are going to be available in the two shops.
Yeah.
Or by order, you show you have your king's cake or queen or yolo, or if you pop up, you can buy.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
And from Adelia's Norfolk Street Bakery, she also has a branch in Station Road to Clement, Maison Clement, which is in Hills Road.
What are you going to have here for Christmas? Are you doing any special things?
Yes, so we will do the traditional British mince pies with puff pastry and sweet paste.
You'll have two types then, puff pastry and sweet pastry.
Yeah. And to satisfy the French over Christmas, we'll do the traditional Christmas logs. So we'll have four variety. We'll have very traditional chocolate logs with a Genoese, with a chocolate crème au beurre. The same version but with coffee crème au beurre. And as well, we'll have another two entremets mousse Christmas logs with a Givara. It's a chocolate milk chocolate mousse. And the other one will be the Vert Noir, which is a chocolate mousse with a pistachio crème brûlée inside.
Oh, so chocolate logs are very popular in France then?
Oh yes, I mean it's more the shape, which is popular. After that you can design it as you please, but the shape is the most important,
right.
Really.
So they're more popular than mince pies?
Yes, I mean for the French, yeah. I mean the British are really into the mince pies all throughout December, but for the French it's really the 24th of December, which is very important. This is where they put their best effort around the dinner table, so they do put a lot of effort into that.
So their big Christmas meal is on Christmas Eve,
right? On Christmas Eve, yes.
And Christmas Day they recover and just enjoy.
Yes.
So there's less stress on Christmas Day, actually. It's quite good. Right, and when will these things be on sale here?
So we will start to put some on sale beginning of December. So in about 2 or 3 weeks' time, the first will appear.
Yeah, and what will they be, the first ones?
So the first one, we will put the traditional one, so the traditional chocolates and the traditional coffee. So it's a rolled Genoese with a crème au beurre. And we have as well on display the Givara and the Vert Noir, but those are already on display, so they will stay there.
Right, okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I hope they all sell well.
Yeah. Thank you very much indeed.
That was Clement from Maison Clement, and we'll be hearing about more Christmas produce shortly.
News from a Romy in Bennett Street now. I met Francesco Genovese earlier in the week, and he told me about their aperitivo.
We started aperitivo a couple of days ago, and this is following, you know, hundreds and hundreds of requests we have had over the last few years from our customers. And aperitivo and happy hour is something extremely popular in Italy and in Sicily. Most places will offer you, like in afternoon after you finish work, some great cocktails. In Rome, it's something that we always wanted to do, so always wanted to focus on. But again, one thing led to another. We've been, you know, fairly busy over the last few years, but we now decided that it was the right time, and so we were so happy. We worked for this for the last 3 to 4 months. We looked at the best and most popular cocktails in Italy and in Sicily in particular, and we wanted to focus on five most popular ones, you know, great taste, the Sicilian aspect. We have one that focuses on limoncello, our limoncello spritz. Again, the great thing is that once you go there and you get two cocktails, you get a free platter. So you get lots of nibbles that goes with it. And again, this is follow exactly the tradition we have in Italy and Sicily with the happy hour style. But you get your cocktail and we will bring you lots of nibbles. You get your olives, you got, breads, you get a bowl of caponata, you got some ham, you get some Sicilian cheese, which is absolutely fantastic. It's called Nero di Sicilia. It's some cheese with the black pepper inside, and you also get little squares of pizza or focaccia or things like that. And again, it's something that we are, you know, very happy. It has been very popular. Again, we started 3 days ago, and so far the feedback has been extremely positive. So we're very happy about that.
And caponata is an interesting dish because
vegans can eat it, presumably.
Indeed. Yeah, again, we couldn't call ourselves a truly Sicilian shop without having caponata on our menu.
But just in case people aren't sure about what caponata is, perhaps you could just say what's in it.
Absolutely. So a caponata, imagine, is more like it's like a vegetable ratatouille, but the Sicilian version is a bit basically sweet. We put in Sicily, we put some vinegar to create some kind of sweet taste around the vegetables. It's just vegetables in it. You got onions, you got aubergines. Obviously, in Sicily, we use a lot of aubergines, so we couldn't do it without it. Peppers and tomatoes. And again, the great thing, it has is very few basic ingredients, but very tasty. You know, the overall result is absolutely outstanding. And one, we do our pizza as well with caponata, which is great for vegan, and a great feedback. You know, people loves it because, yes, again, it's very simple but very tasty at the same time.
Yeah. And what time is the aperitivo available?
Basically, we start from 4 p.m. Pretty much every day, but Saturday. Saturday, it will be from 8 p.m. onwards, and people can enjoy any two cocktails from our list, and they can get, again, the free nibbles that go with it, or they can get a bottle of wine, and they can get all the nibbles for free.
And is that in all three of them?
At the moment, for this Christmas time, we started in Bene Street, you know, the first shop we opened in Cambridge, and then in the new year we will then slowly expand it to the other shops.
Yeah. Good. So it's not just for Christmas, this is a permanent
absolutely
feature.
yeah it is. Again, you know, I think our customers would be upset if we stop it
if you took it away from
exactly
them.
no yeah, we're definitely, it's definitely stay, you know.
So, aperitivos are not just for Christmas. In Bennett Street, Aromi, now. And there's the music signalling time for the latest food tweets from the city.
Yeah, very interesting one from the Flying Pig, the pub in Hills Road. Landlady Justin Hatfield and Man About Town, or Musician About Town, Nick Barraclough. They're launching a book there tonight at 6 o'clock. And the book is about the pub's history. And the pub was built in 1840, so it has a lot of history. I think it was Sid Barrett's favourite pub. It was certainly his local. So the book does feature Sid Barrett, and Nick, who I think used to work for Radio 2, knows a lot about music, so I'm sure that will feature. Calverley's Brewery has tweeted they're open now, with Al Chili providing Mexican food, burritos, quesadillas, tacos. And Calverley's have their new London lager, their porter, to go with it. The Garden Kitchen in Mill Road, that's closing at 2:30 today for a staff Christmas party. Brew Board's tap room is open until 6 o'clock today, with all 10 taps loaded and freshly cooked pies. You'll have a very nice afternoon there, couldn't you?
Sounds excellent.
Now, a few episodes ago, we mentioned how Sam Owens and the team at Thirsty are putting their weight behind Retsina. That's the off-malign Greek wine, which has improved vastly over the decades, but it still needs to shake off that rather dodgy image. Now, in a similar way, tequila is making a move for the spotlight. And if you ask someone what's the best way to enjoy a tequila, what's the best way to enjoy a tequila, Alan?
Well, I like it with salt.
Well, the best way is to no longer down it quickly, which is what you would have needed the salt for. It's to sip it. And there is lots of high-quality tequila out there. The salt, lemon and lime is very much a throwback to the days when substandard tequila was rife. So, when distilled entirely from the blue agave cactus, you get something that is really smooth. And it just so happens that the other week saw Cambridge's first tequila bar. And I went along to see what's going on, as Marvin Gaye would say.
Has anybody here ever had a drink called a tequila sunrise? Huh? Well, this is a song about tequila, Mexican whiskey.
We had the idea 2 years ago, right, of us really trying to develop this space. My name is Tunji Oyewobi. I am the owner of 2648 Cambridge. 2648 comes from the address of Motown Records. We bought the place in December 2014, 4 years next week. It was formerly the vaults.
If people haven't been here since it was the vaults, it's changed quite a lot.
And we kept it the vaults for a year, just to get the feel of what Cambridge is like.
So this has been in the works for quite a while.
Part of the basement space in 2648 used to be occupied by Will Lowe's gin lab.
Yes, I think Will wanted to create that lab environment with his gin lab, and he had the Cambridge blue colours as his backdrop. And what we've done is we wanted to make the room feel like you were being hugged in a really nice, cosy space.
Then, as we covered earlier this year, Alfie Fowler took up residence. Now, he was originally from the Dovetailed company who make the New Food 3D food printer. Alfie set up Doppelganger Burger, vegan burgers, marinated soy patties on gluten-free rolls that have proven so successful he's about to move out and open a full-fledged burger shop of his own. Now, it's time for something new.
And then through this bookcase, there's this great corridor, and you come through into the secret library space, which can be used for private events. And this is what we've been working on in the last few months, is transforming this space, making it more luxurious, more interesting colours.
Feels a little bit like Tijuana, I suppose, with all the decorations around.
Colourful skulls everywhere and tequila bottles.
Your tequilas, they are drawing me.
I'm Dan Wilson, General Manager of 2648. We're very excited to announce that we just opened up our tequila mezcal bar.
What's tequila?
It's like beer.
Is it fattening?
The tequila then really is an extension of this room having its own private bar that focuses on a spirit that we actually really love. We really love tequila. I think it's fair to say tequila is probably the next gin.
Definitely, yeah. Tequila has been tipped as the next big thing.
And if you go to London or the big cities, you'll find your rum speciality bars, you'll find your tequila speciality bars.
There's tequila bars all over the country, from Manchester to London to Cardiff. It's an amazing opportunity, and I'm really excited.
I think everyone has a bad experience from the ages of, like, 16, 17, 18 with tequila.
When you're in a nightclub at 4 in the morning and you pay 50p for a shot, you know?
First thing I told him was don't have tequila. And then, of course, he had tequila.
A lot of people remember them £1 shots of tequila.
And I think that relationship just needs to change.
There's actually so much more to that.
And we're sort of here trying to push that change in the relationship.
So you can try a new mezcal every week and get a whole different flavour profile, from an Espadena, Topacice, Pomometo. There's so many different flavours to work with.
I had one smooth shot of three fingers tequila. Just
something
up the edge.
Tequila wasn't the problem, you know, it was just a really bad brand. But if you try different brands, you can see that tequila is actually quite a versatile drink.
There's a lot more to it. It's a lot more complex. It's different flavours, different styles.
This is a culture, this is a history.
Especially when you get into mezcal, there's about 25 different agave species that make mezcal.
You know, it's the same equivalent when people talk about their wines or their champagnes. You know, there's different strands, there's different species, depending on the altitude, the pH of the soil. It all can affect the way that the agave plant tastes and what gives you your sort of mezcal flavourings as well, and your tequila flavouring, obviously.
We've definitely seen an increase in the on-trade, so within bars and restaurants and hotels. It actually sells more than whiskey, single malts and things like that.
There's not any cocktail bars in the city that specialise in one style or one brand.
And it's quite a cocktail list they've got. I think they're launching it tonight, aren't they?
Yes, they are, yeah. It covers a range of different styles and flavours.
With our menu, we've got a wide range of tequilas and mezcals. We'll be changing the menu every 3 months.
And it uses quite a lot of the different agaves that they've got in the bar.
The agave plant is how you make your tequilas and your mezcals. Agave varies in size from a few inches to more than 12 feet tall and wide. Long, spear-shaped, fleshy leaves, often armed with teeth and tipped with a long terminal spine. Just like me, they're hardy and tough. Tough enough to withstand dry wind, hot sun, low rainfall and poor soil.
On our menu at the moment, there's 7 different drinks, but you can have 60 variations of each. Something different, something a little bit crazy, but at the same time, lets people choose what they want as well.
So we're here in Cambridge for a weekend visit, and we have come out on our first evening, and I saw a sign saying cocktails downstairs, and we followed it, and we've come into this bar. I love tequila, and this is a tequila night, and one of the first in Cambridge, I believe. So it's obviously meant to be that we are here, and it's fantastic.
So the boys have done a really good job working with the flavours of the tequila and the mezcals to bring a proper, authentic taste of Mexico to Cambridge, which I think is brilliant.
This chap's very knowledgeable.
The tequila man.
You're the tequila man.
Yeah, that's incredible.
He's Nathan.
I'm Nathan.
Nathan Sorby.
I work for a company called Mangrove, and we are one of the suppliers for 2648.
How did you get into all this?
So I fell in love with tequila mezcal 10 years ago when I was bartending. A good friend of mine introduced me to 100% agave tequila by giving me it and saying, look, don't shot this, just sip it. Yeah. It'll change your life. That was Herradura Reposado, and I now work for Herradura, so it pretty much did change my life.
Herradura is also the name of the second oldest tequila in the world. If you look at the word tequila in the Nahuatl language, which is the native language of Jalisco, the state where tequila is produced is Tuquila, which means the place where the rock cuts. And that's because everyone was barefoot, and there's naturally occurring obsidian in the ground, so people cut their feet. And it's also where the best agaves were being grown for tequila, the Blue Weber agave. So they founded the town, and they called it Tequila.
Tequila is one of the most heavily regulated spirits in the world. So it's up there with cognac, champagne. So they have a lot of, there's a lot of laws around what you have to do in order to call it tequila.
Right.
You can only use one species of agave, which is the Blue Weber agave.
Okay.
It's not actually blue. It's green with a fungus that turns it blue.
Okay. Do you know, it reminds me of Stilton cheese. Yeah. You know, that has the specific, you have to have specific dynamics to be able to call it Stilton.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, the mould that they use within it and the area it's produced and the way in it's produced.
That is exactly right.
It's a similar thing, isn't it?
It should be protected.
So it's
it should be, the history should be protected.
I know this because Nathan told me. Nathan knows this because he's a tequila enthusiast.
I get really kind of nerdy and get really into the history and the heritage of a brand, of a spirit category. Mm. And finding out that there's a broad spectrum of flavours and styles and kind of workflow that goes into it, and production is different for tequila and mezcal and sotol and bacanora, which are stars of mezcal. And that got me really excited. Yeah, I fell in love with the liquid.
So this is going to be a far cry from our student days of a shot of tequila with the salt on the air.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No more salt and lime. Salt, lemon
and
lime,
time to get up. And it's just the evolution of the venue itself that we're constantly doing. We don't want to stay at the same places. I think venues who do the same thing for too long become very stale, get very complacent.
Tequila and mezcal are booming.
It has really come together, and it's just lovely to see it tonight.
So I think everyone should try and drink more.
This is your job.
It's my job, yeah.
You are such a gifted guy.
You are lucky.
This is the fun bit. You want to see the 8 hours of
that? Yeah.
Three tequilas.
Sure, amigo.
That was the new Tequila Den at Bar 2648 on 14A Trinity Street. And many thanks to all involved, Tunjay, Alex, Nathan, Dan and the customers. And now the tequila menu at 2648 currently consists of 10 cocktails. Of course, using the tequilas that Nathan was mentioning, Herradura, El Jimador, Montelobos, Joven Mezcal, and there are some great names for these cocktails too. Here's a couple of examples. The Last of the Oaxacans, I love that, containing mezcal, green chartreuse, maraschino cherry, lime and Tabasco, and my very favourite, the 5-point palm exploding heart technique with mezcal, vermouth, Kahlua and Aztec chocolate bitters. Full details are on the web. You can go to 2648cambridge.com and they're also on Twitter at 2648cambridge.
Back now to our trip around some local bakeries and patisseries to find out what Christmas foods they have. First stop, Dulcedo in Hills Road, where Andrew told me what they have.
This year, we're concentrating for the moment on chocolate, so we're going to have figurines, there'll be snowmen, there'll be Rudolphs, Santa's bellies, maybe, again, from last year. We're doing the chocolate bubbles, which are filled with pink pralines, caramelised sort of nuts. And then we're moving on to the sort of big cakes for Christmas. So we'll be doing some Scottish cakes, Dundee cake, things like that. And then we'll be doing things like pan de pice, which is like a gingerbread-spiced French cake, which is a celebration cake at Christmas time.
And the Dundee cake's quite a fruit cake.
It's a Scottish thing, with almonds on top, lots of whiskey and the usual things, yeah.
It's not iced, though, is it?
It's not iced. It's more like a fruit cake, I guess. It's more leaning towards the Christmas pudding, how it sort of looks. Yeah. We shall probably be doing seasonal macaroons and chocolate.
How will the seasonal macaroons be seasonal?
So they'll be Christmas themed, cranberry, gingerbread, brandy cream. So there'll be flavours changing all through the season.
And the quality of what you produce here is just stunningly good. How long did it take you to get that good?
So I've been chefing for 20 years in fine dining restaurants and hotels, I guess, and it's sort of just progressed to running a pâtisserie on the side.
So you've had a lot of practice.
A lot of practice.
Right, and how long did it take, would you say? How many years did it take?
I mean, 7-8 years is good experience.
Doing it every day for 7 or 8
years.
Yeah,
learning from mistakes is all the way to learn, really.
Dolcito is very impressive. A few doors along from Dolcito is Cambridge Oven, where I spoke with Yolita a couple of weeks ago now, so things weren't entirely settled then.
Well, we're planning to do chestnut and cranberry bread, and probably, well, one of our most popular things that we do are cruffins. So maybe mincemeat filled cruffins.
Oh, right, so Christmas cruffin.
Yeah, Christmas cruffin. That's the plan. And gingerbreads, probably. Decorated ones, maybe in the window.
Right, so sort of festively decorated.
Yes, exactly.
That was Yolita from Cambridge Oven, where they do a really nice rosemary bread. I've had a couple of times and would recommend it.
I'm free. I'm free.
But now, here's news of free food available in Cambridge, which you can find on the Olio app.
Yes, Innes, who lives behind Argyle Street, just off Mill Road, she's bought too much coriander, so she's giving some away. It's free to pick up after 7 p.m. on Sunday. Organic fair trade coffee pods, they're still available. They're near the big Tesco on Newmarket Road. They're available for pick-up on Thursdays between 8 and 9 p.m. And some big news, if you are a puppy or know someone who is a puppy, Kathy has 11 packets of Nature's Diet wet puppy food, 400-gram packs. You can call or text for pick-up. Kathy is on the Oakington Road. And this is all available on the Olio app, which is all about giving away free food, food that shouldn't go to waste.
We all know how successful Aromi is, so much so that the one in Bennett Street is going to extend into the empty shop next door. But when? Nothing seems to have happened for a year or so. Alan asked co-owner Francesco about the hold-up.
Francesco, you've bought the place, or got the place next door to the original Aromi in Bennett Street, but it's nothing's happened for a very long time. What's going on?
Well, yeah, very good question indeed. What's going on? Yeah, that has been, let's say, an interesting journey. We thought it was going to be quite straightforward, but sadly, it took far longer than we ever expected. Basically, one, we want to join the two shops because they are one next to each other, and we wanted to join both at the basement and at the ground level. Unfortunately, one of them is a listed building, and also the shops are not at the same level. So it means that one shop to link to the other one, you have to dig a few steps down.
So the basements are at different levels.
Exactly. So yeah, in order for people to go from one area to the other one on the basement level, they need to go down some stairs. So we need to dig a little bit down. And because, again, the building is so old, there were no really clear plans of what's underneath, so we had to do a lot of investigations, not even the landlord had those details. So
and the landlord's King's College.
It is, yeah. And that's why pretty much it took so long. But hopefully we are now through the final part of this endless application process, and we should be able to start working at the beginning of the new year. So we estimate that, you know, before, towards mid, end of spring of next year, the two shops will be joined, and we will have more space for our customers, and again, the look of the shop will be stunning. So we're really looking forward.
Because it does get quite crowded, doesn't it? Certainly on the ground floor.
It does. You know, we're lucky because we celebrated our 50-year. We opened our third shop over a year ago at the Grafton, but our shops are still extremely busy, and we also are. We should be able to announce some exciting news fairly shortly about a new shop opening in Cambridge. I cannot say anything more than that at the moment. But yeah, I would say so. You've been extremely, you know, positive time, and we're looking forward to announce those news to everybody.
Well, we'll look forward to that very much.
Yeah, same.
Okay, thanks very much.
Well, that's a bit of a scoop, a new Aromi. Francesco didn't say where it will be, though.
No, there wasn't the slightest indication. I tried probing, but it just didn't work.
Thanks. Oh, well, our final look for today at Christmas foods, this time cheese and chocolate. I met with Susanna Watson of Humclosen at Noonan Bakery Cafe's monthly Sunday food fair, and it turns out that there are going to be several festive fairs there too.
Coming up to Christmas, we have three more festive fairs on the 9th of December, and then we have Sunday the 16th, and then we're doing a special evening on Thursday the 20th for last-minute cheese shopping and any bottles of wine for people you may have forgotten off your list from 3 till 8 p.m. on the Thursday the 20th in the evening. So I source farmhouse cheeses from small producers across Europe.
What are the ones you'd especially recommend for Christmas?
A lovely Beaufort from the Alps, which was made 18 months ago, and it's an excellent age to eat that cheese at. So it's always something that the French really seek out at Christmas time. The Vacherin Mont d'Or, also from the mountains slightly further north in the Jura. That's made just through the winter months, so that's another thing that people associate with Christmas. Then, of course, we come to Britain. We've got lovely farmhouse cheddar and the Stilton. And I will have some Stitchelton coming as well, which is an unpasteurised Stilton recipe, which people are getting...
Stitchelton Blue, yes.
Yes, getting to know and seek out, so I'll have some of that. And then I have a lovely new cheese, actually, which is a double Gloucester from Gloucestershire, which has just been made this year by a young couple who are escaping from London to make cheese. And that's something that's really delicious and will be something nice to fit into your cheese board as well.
And you also regularly have wines?
Yes. So the wines are all natural wines. They're organic or biodynamic. For me, that's important because I know then that the farmers are looking after the soil and also not putting any chemicals into their wines when they make the wine. So you get very, you know, pure and hopefully less of a headache during
that
the festivities.
Good. Fair enough.
So I've just got a selection of sweet wines for festivities. So I've got a nice Jurançon, which is a white dessert wine, but you could also have as an aperitif. A delicious Pedro Ximenez from Jerez, so sherry. And then I also have a Banyuls coming, which is a sweet red wine, which is very good with cheese, but also very good with chocolate, and that comes from the south of France as well.
And talking about chocolate, Bumble and Oak chocolates were also in Noonan Bakery Cafe's Sunday food fair and will be at the festive fairs there too. I spoke with Ria Falvo about the hand-painted chocolates she'd brought in.
Well, today I've brought in something special, getting closer to Christmas. So I've got some frankincense and myrrh bars painted gold. So the gifts, of, I call them We Three Kings bar. And then I also have it's an after-dinner cigar bar. it's just infused with Lapsang Souchong tea, so it's a smoky tea. And then with caramel crackling and candied nibs. And then we have a selection. We've got after-dinner mints and coconut, and I've made a bar, a two-layer bar, with the after-dinner mint and toasted coconut. Also made the house smell lovely. And then I've got some single-origin bars as well, Peru, Ecuador, St. Dominique, and Madagascar. And they all taste very different based on which part of the world they come from. So,
do you do your own tempering and conching?
I've done my own tempering. I didn't do my own conching this time and wrote. So these are beans that I've brought in through a French company. I'd like to carry some of my friends' beans, but they're about double the price. One of my favorites is actually Pump Street Chocolates. It's a lovely family. If you've ever been to Orford, highly recommended.
And you've got the most beautiful hand-painted little oaks.
I had some elves come in last night, and it's a cocoa base paint that we've brought in as well from France, and we just hand painted honeycombs and little acorns and kind of a little natural theme, so kind of wood shaped bars, and I have all dark chocolate. The lowest I have at the moment is a 58%, and the highest I have is about 78%. So this is actually a Cuban single origin, the last of the single origin from Cuba, and you can't seem to get it anymore. So
hence the Cuban
cigar.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, I
like
that vibe.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
So,
and you also got something from Dolce.
I also work with Andy. Yeah, Andy and Joanna from Dolcero. I can never say that correctly. But he's just got some lovely baubles this year filled with pralines, and I just love supporting him. And he's supported me a lot. So it's lovely.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And are you regularly as part of the Newnham Bakery group?
I live in the neighbourhood, and so literally the next street over, so I always, Suzanne and I like to take over the bakery together.
And the next festive food fairs at Newnham Bakery are Sunday the 9th of December, then on the 16th of December, they're both from 10 till 3, then again on the 20th of December, which is a Thursday, from 3 till 8 p.m. This Newnham Bakery Cafe is in Derby Street, Newnham, of course.
We've heard a lot about Christmas food, but what is Christmas food without something to drink? Here's Alice Archer with some advice on wine and food matching, including a vegetarian option.
If you're having turkey, I think a rich, buttery Chardonnay is very difficult to go wrong with. So you could look at a New World Chardonnay, like a South African one from Stellenbosch. It's an Australian one. Alternatively, go traditional with a fabulous white Burgundy, something like a Pouilly Foussé. Reds-wise, for me, I think Pinot Noir is a pretty good one. It's light, meets a lot of palates. It's with a bird that hasn't got too much going on, and so it does balance quite well with that. And then if you look at like a fruity cranberry sauce, etc., or some red cabbage, all of those flavours are working well. So again, you're looking at Burgundy, or maybe Australia, or Chile. Another really popular option is Rhone Reds. So if you find a good Châteauneuf du Pape, go for it. That'll be delicious. Goose. Goose would be maybe the next top choice. Or at least in my mind, goose is the only choice, but that's just what I've been brought up on. Goose and white wine is a really interesting thing, and it does split the pack because it's quite a meaty bird, but then it's got quite a lot of fat on it too, so you get a very rich flavour coming off it. That kind of rich fattiness is really good with Alsatian or German white wines. Mm. So with wines that have got a little bit of residual sugar but still good acidity, which will cut through the fat. So you can get a really good Alsace Riesling, or even a Gewürztraminer or a Pinot Gris, would have the weight and high acidity to really cut through that and make it a very refreshing combination. That would work as well if some of the side dishes were slightly lighter. But if you're going all out and having all the trimmings, I'd say something on the lines of, I've had a really lovely combination with Nebbiolo. So that's traditionally found in northern Italy, in an area called Barolo, Barbaresco. So if you find any of those, absolutely excellent. I've also had an absolutely delicious Australian Nebbiolo with goose. They're growing a remarkable amount of Italian grape varieties now in Australia. And this Australian Nebbiolo is very well renowned, but it can be a bit more of an acquired taste and it needs to have a bit of age on it, whereas the Australian Nebbiolo was just more fruity and ready to go. Again, you can look at Pinot Noir, or you could even look at maybe a good Belgian beer, if that was what you were thinking. Ooh. Nice, weighty Belgian beer. Yeah, absolutely recommend. If you're going for beef, got to be claret, really, for me. Good Bordeaux. Look out for something from the Medoc or Home Medoc. Or if you're having ham, maybe not on Christmas Day, maybe on Boxing Day, I think ham's a good opportunity to go for something a little bit cheekier, a little bit less serious. You want something bright and juicy, and particularly on Boxing Day, you want it to be quite easygoing. And so for me, that's an opportunity for Beaujolais. It's an area just below Burgundy. It's all made from a grape variety called Gamay Noir, and it has this lovely, bright, slightly plummy, but it's often got a little sour cherry. Sometimes younger ones have a bubblegum kind of characteristic. But look for a good Cru Beaujolais, like a Fleury or a Bourgogne, and I think that's absolutely lovely with ham.
Anything for vegetarians?
Ooh. Again, nut roast, you can go for a really robust Rhone wine, like we were saying with the turkey.
Yes.
So again, a good Châteauneuf du Pape or any Grenache, Syrah blend from around the area, maybe a nice Vaccarat. Pinot Noir would also go well if you prefer lighter red wines. Mm-hmm. And again, if you've got quite rich accoutrement, that buttery Chardonnay is going to work as well.
Good. Any excuse for that buttery Chardonnay,
absolutely.
I'm very happy for.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you've got mushrooms, for example, in the nut roast, choose the Chardonnay. Mm. Possibly the Pinot Noir, but the Chardonnay will be really good.
Yeah.
There are a few different ways that you can go with Christmas pudding. Some people might try with something a bit lighter in order to, you know, counteract it, and other people might go all in and go for something big and rich and syrupy, like, for example, your Pedro Ximenez. For me, my favourite pairing would be a Malmsey Madeira, because you've got these rich characters, you've got a rich nuttiness, you've got some baked fruit character, you've almost got a Christmas pudding character going on in the wine. But then the joy of Madeira, as we've discussed before, is the wonderful acidity that you get. So you really have this refreshing note at the end, whereas your Pedro Ximenez is just very syrupy. This has syrupy and then acidity to keep it refreshing. Other people would go for something like a Muscat de Beaube de Bernice, just have a light floral thing to cut through it. But for me, there are, you know, other positions for that. Another option, so chocolate and wine is a difficult thing, but if you're having a chocolate Yule log, for example, there are lots of possibilities for rich wines to go with chocolate. For me, one of my favourites would be a red dessert wine, such as a Rasto from the Southern Rhone, or a Banyuls and a Mauri, which are from the Roussillon area of Southern France. These are traditionally made from Grenache, and then they're fortified. So they're made a bit like a port, but they're not quite as high alcohol. They're usually around 18% as opposed to 1920, and they tend to have a slightly more floral character behind them, but really delicious with chocolate. Stollen would probably be something like a sweet Riesling. If you had an Auslese or a Buren Auslese, some nice sweet sugary Riesling with Stollen, I'd say.
Oh, well, that sounds very appealing. I haven't had any Stollen yet, with or without a sweet Riesling or mince pies, and I'm really looking forward to them. Anyway, that was Alice Archer.
And Green Onion signals the start of our news section. We begin, as usual, with jobs.
Yes, Provenance Kitchen is opening up its own cafe, deli, restaurant, and there's a variety of positions available. It's going to be in Whittlesford. It's opening in spring. To apply, email them at ask@provenancekitchen.com.
Faux in Wheeler Street is looking for a head chef. The pay is from £32,000 to £36,000 per annum. Pop in and get details.
Afternoon Teasers Cakes will be popping up on the counter of Cambridge Cookery and Bistro off Hills Road this and every weekend. Joe is baking them on the premises, and that's from 9 till 3.
Urban Shed in King Street is closing permanently on the 20th of December. The space, however, will be taken by Thirsty, who will be selling both food and drink. Thirsty and hungry.
Pine Shop is having an Advent giveaway. Just follow them on Twitter and respond to their tweets to have a chance of winning.
And finally, Onnie's Wine Bar at 111 Mill Road, that's more or less opposite the Mill Road Butchers, they have a Christmas menu, but you will need to order in advance. Dishes such as stuffed quail, braised bacon and liver faggots, roasted swede, carrots and Brussels sprouts, or salmon wellington with vegetables, or fasciola beansteak in harissa sauce with swede, carrots and Brussels sprouts. All sounds delicious. Three courses for £30 or two for £25. And you can book on 07565 702 341 or via their website, Onys, that's spelt onys.co.uk.
And that's all we have time for today, but you can listen again. We're here, alternate Saturdays at 1 p.m, repeated on Sunday at 2 p.m, and then podcast early in the next week.
And if you'd like to get in touch with any news or comment when we're off the air, you can email us flavour@cambridge105.co.uk or contact us on Twitter at flavour105.
And coming up on Cambridge 105 Radio today at 2 o'clock, Bookmark, a festive edition. Lee Chambers is joined by writer and broadcaster Rory McGrath to discuss the standout books of the year. 3 till 4 community focus with Neil Whiteside about a substantial grant to Winter Comfort. From 4 till 5 this week, the best of Cambridge 105. From 5 till 6, the Cambridge football show, the results. 6 until 8, Chris Brown's Soul and Dance Show. 8 till 9, Centuries of Sound, a new series. And from 9 until 11, I shall be back. I'm joining Paul Cristoforou for a look back at the career of The Pretty Things as they prepare to play their final gig after 55 years as a band. And I'm going to see them. It's next Thursday.
Nice.
11 until 1 in the morning. I shall be asleep by then. But, Club Beats. Dave Price presents Club Beats and plays You Feel Good Dance Tunes. I will not be dancing at 1 in the morning. But that's all from us. We'll be back on the 22nd of December. But until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.